This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
7:19, Friday, the 26th of August, and of course you're listening to The Morning Run. Now, in about 30 minutes, we'll be speaking to lawyer Edmund Bond on reforms in the pardon system for convicted prisoners. But in the meantime, let's talk about why Malaysian businesses should commit to going green. Because the United Nations has warned that it is now or never to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees. Now, a warning Malaysia is taking heed of, as in the 12th Malaysian plan, the country has a target of becoming a carbon neutral nation by as early as 2015 and a commitment to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions intensity in terms of GDP by 45% in 2030.
Well, 2050 is in 28 years away, 330 months more to go. As much as government policy is important and is the foundation to catalyzing change, businesses also need to adapt. With a mindset change that taking on a green transition is not a lose-lose situation, because a report by Bain & Company and Temasek has found that Southeast Asia's green sector will see $1 trillion in economic opportunities by 2030. But so far, only $15 billion has been invested. What a big gap. Now, the question is, what do businesses need right now to hasten this transition, as companies are still facing various headwinds like labour shortage, rising costs of raw materials and supply disruptions?
For some answers, we speak to Datin Sri Sunita Rajakumar. She's chairperson of the Climate Governance Malaysia. That is, of course, our chapter of the World Economic Forum's Climate Governance Initiative. Good morning, Datin Sri. Now, Southeast Asia has tremendous green opportunities. But you know, Malaysia, we would stand to lose out if local suppliers don't go green. So how do you foresee businesses being left out if they don't actually make this green transition?
Good morning, everyone. So Malaysia might only contribute 0.7% of global emissions, but exports are 70% of our GDP, and we are a significant player in the global supply chain. It's very clear not everyone is going to make the transition. A survey by a global bank middle of last year was very clear that the majority of multinationals will take a zero-tolerance approach, and they will remove suppliers that endanger their carbon transition plan. So if local suppliers don't go green, they stand to lose their customers. It'll be difficult for them to attract investors or debt financing. And it'll be difficult for them, of course, to retain the best talent.
But this is the challenge, isn't it? Because many of them are still trying to recover from the pandemic. So that balance is core. But so I just want to get your sense, right? When you have conversations with board members, right, has the push by companies for their local suppliers to take on this green transition been easy then?
This really has not been easy. The climate emergency is simultaneously simple enough for a child to understand, and yet complex and nuanced. It is foreseeable and yet unpredictable. This is an uncharted journey which has no silver bullet. It does require a significant investment of resources, time, literacy, skills, and critical thinking, which many boards and management who are focused on BAU are unaccustomed to. Mm-hmm. We are facing multiple tsunamis, and boards need to urgently apply their minds to being part of the ecosystem of solutions which are urgently needed.
Okay, but in the whole chain of business operations, I mean, at what stage would it be crucial for businesses to focus on while taking on this climate agenda though?
So we advocate from the board's perspective. Directors are long-term stewards who are ultimately responsible for the sustainability of the business, and setting the tone from the top is critical. The governance of climate risks, identifying, managing, mitigating, ensuring all directors accept and understand their responsibility, because it will be impossible to claim that they were not aware. It is clearly their duty, and thence liability will be attached for failure to manage this. Ensuring throughout the organization that there's climate literacy, that it is scoped into all board committees, that it is acculturated. So the whole spectrum of reactions range from identifying the baseline, what is your usage of waste, water, energy efficiency, and then decarbonizing this, setting targets, and of course, attaining for the gold standards of reporting and disclosure. And we see that the ISSB's latest exposure drafts are going to be game changers. And finally, which many Scandinavian companies are already doing, embedding sustainability into the DNA of the business and ensuring that you're operating within planetary boundaries. So all of this is already happening.
Okay, so but my issue about this is when you speak to many corporates or many companies in Malaysia, what is their biggest resistance? Is it they don't know where to begin? They don't know where to start because the requirements are actually quite high? Or they are worried about the cost of actually implementing all these requirements?
I think both tend to come up very frequently in conversations. I think we're very used to prescriptive measures. So whether it's the regulators or standard setting bodies explaining to you carefully exactly what is needed, and then we just do that. Mm. So when it's a crisis that doesn't have a roadmap, then I think many businesses are unaccustomed to evolving that level of critical thinking that is needed. Because each business, industry, region, country needs to adapt its own solutions.
Maybe the pressure here is actually it has to come from capital markets, from the source of funding. So then perhaps the financial institutions then need to, you know, make sustainability core to them and impose it to their key customers, right? Where do you see financial institutions in Malaysia playing that role in driving that sustainability agenda for companies, right? How rigorous and robust have they been?
So we have a multi-regulator platform that has been working on this for a few years. The regulators are ahead of the curve in this sense. Bursa implemented FTSE for Good before the Paris Agreement, and they have been advocating for TCFD reporting for many years now. Bank Negara pulled together the Joint Committee on Climate Change, JC3, of which almost every financial licensed entity is a member of. And they are already asking if we can contemplate mandating TCFD reporting by 2024, which is a very short deadline. So the regulators have been pushing for this. The financial institutions are very clear with the taxonomy as to how they're going, although it's principles-based and not prescriptive, but they're very clear as to how they're going to be required to report for this transition, not just investing in green, but investing in the transition from brown to green.
But what's the take-up been like? Because even Dato' Umar Swift, CEO of Bursa Malaysia, recently stated that, yes, there are a lot of companies making, doing what they need to do in terms of reporting for ESG, but the reporting doesn't go, you know, deep enough or thorough enough.
So at Climate Governance Malaysia and also at the CEO Action Network, which is a network of 57 CEOs who are advocating for increased climate ambition, what I'm seeing is that there are certain leaders who see this as a huge competitive advantage and want to be ahead of the curve. But whatever they are doing internally within their organization, would it help if government rolled out much more supportive policies? Definitely. And so organizations like CGM and CAN are actually working closely with key ministries to advocate for policy recommendations, some of which arose during the roundtable sessions which we held last year and this year, simple and elegant solutions which could likely get us to net zero very quickly.
But sometimes do you think government needs to do the stick more than the carrot to really drive this transition going forward? Because I think we talk a lot about these incentives and such. Perhaps time now regulatory enforcement is necessary, isn't it?
I think if you want to impart a sense of urgency, so during COP26 last year, all countries were invited to increase their climate ambition relating to 2050. But at this year, COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, I think they are looking at increasing ambition even further. And this means 2030 targets. And science informs us that we need to halve our emissions by 2030, which is only 8 years away. And that in turn requires us to determine when we are peaking. And remember, during the pandemic, arguably the world's largest social experiment where almost everyone was told to stay at home, emissions only reduced by 6 to 9%. So the scale of the transition that is needed is unprecedented. But as we all know, we are possibly the last generation that can do anything about this and the first generation that can do anything about this.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Datin Sri Sunita Rajakumar, Chairperson for Climate Governance Malaysia, giving us some indication on what boards are doing in this country to actually have better ESG practices, because if they don't, they actually will lose out. Up next, we'll be speaking to Dr. Michael Montesano, coordinator of the Thailand Studies Program at ISIS Yusof Ishak Institute, on the suspension of their prime minister that's happening after the 7:30 news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.